Cahill looked at me. But that didn't work out. So I'm back to work and back to begging the council to put me on their agenda. He frowned and shook his head. Tomorrow, then? Tomorrow. I watched Cahill as he walked to the stable. He had been counting on catching an Ixian spy to influence the council. I wondered what he would try next. Kiki nudged my arm and I scratched behind her ears before I returned to my rooms. Rummaging around for some paper, I sat at my desk and drew a crude sketch of a horse. I labeled the parts that I could remember. Topaz and Kiki helped me with the rest. The connection I had formed with the two horses was odd yet comforting. It was as if we were all in the same room, doing different tasks and minding our own business and having our own private thoughts. But when one of us would speak directly to the other, we would hear it. I only had to think about Kiki and her thoughts would fill my mind. The same was true with Iris. I didn't need to pull power and project it to Iris. All I needed to do was think about her. Over the next week, my days fell into a pattern. Mornings spent with Iris to learn about magic. Afternoons spent napping, studying, and practicing my self-defense techniques. Evenings were spent with Cahill and Kiki. As I moved throughout the campus, I kept a wary eye out for Goal. I hadn't forgotten his threat. Not long into my magical training, Iris began testing me for other abilities.
"Let's see if you can start a fire," Iris said one morning. "This time, when you pull in the power, I want you to concentrate on lighting this candle."
She placed a candlestick in front of me. "How?" I asked, sitting up. I had been reclining on the pillows in her tower room, thinking about Kiki. It had been a week, and I still hadn't ridden her. So far, Cahill had spent every lesson teaching me about horse care and tack. What an annoying man.
"Think of a single flame before you direct your magic,"
Iris demonstrated.
"Fire," she said.
The candle flared and burned before she blew it out.
"Your turn."
I focused on the candle's wick, forming a flaming image in my mind. Pushing magic toward the candle, I willed it to light. Nothing happened. Iris made a strangled sound, and the candle burned.
"Are you directing your magic to the candle?"
"Yes." "Why?"
"You just ordered me to light the candle for you," Iris said in exasperation. "And I did it."
"Is that bad?"
"No. I hope you know how to light a fire the mundane way, because so far, it seems that's not part of your magical skills. Let's try something else."
I tried to move a physical object with no success, unless making Iris do it for me could be considered a magical skill. She raised her mental defenses, blocking out my influence.
"Try again. This time, focus on keeping control."
As I pulled in power, Iris threw a pillow at me. The pillow struck me in the stomach.
"Hey! You are supposed to deflect it with your magic. Try again."
By the end of the session, I was glad Iris had chosen a pillow. Otherwise, I would have been covered with bruises.
"I think you just need to practice your control," Iris said, refusing to give up. "Get some rest. You'll do better tomorrow."
Before leaving, I asked something that had been on my mind for several days. "Iris, can I see more of the Citadel? And I need to exchange my Ixian coins for Cishan so I can buy some items and clothes. Is there a marketplace?"
"Yes, but it's only open one day a week during the hot season."
She paused for a moment, considering.
"I'll give you market days off. No lessons. You can explore the Citadel or do whatever you want. It'll be open in 2 days. In the meantime, I'll exchange your money."
Iris couldn't pass up the opportunity to lecture me on spending money wisely.
"Your expenses are covered while you're in the keep. But once you graduate, you'll be on your own. You'll earn wages as a magician, of course," Iris said. "But don't give your money away."
She smiled to ease the reprimand.
"We don't like to encourage the beggars."
The image of the dirty little boy rose in my mind. "Why don't they have any money?" I asked.
"Some are lazy, preferring to beg instead of work. Others are unable to work because of physical or mental problems. The healers can only do so much. and some gamble or spend their money faster than they can earn it.
But what about the children?
Runaways, orphans, or the offspring of the homeless. The hot season is the worst time for them. Once school starts and the Citadel is populated again, there are places they can go for food and shelter.
Iris touched my shoulder.
Don't worry about them, Yelena.
I mulled over Iris's comments on my way back to my rooms. That evening, while teaching me to saddle and bridle Kiki in her barn stall, Cahill asked,
"What's gotten into you? You've been snapping at me all night."
"Lavender Lady upset," Kiki agreed.
I sucked in a deep breath, preparing to apologize, but an unbidden torrent of words poured from my mouth instead.
"You want Ixia so you can be king, so you can collect taxes, sit on a throne and wear a crown of jewels while the people suffer like they did under your uncle. So your henchmen like Gol can kill innocent children when their parents can't pay the taxes for your fine silk clothes, or so they can kill the parents, leaving their offspring homeless and beggars."
My outburst ended as fast as it had begun. Cahill gaped in shock, but recovered fast.
"That's not what I want," he said. "I want to help the people of Ixia, so they have the freedom to wear whatever clothes they want instead of being forced to wear uniforms, so they can marry whomever they want without securing a permit from their district's general, live wherever they want, even if it's in Citia. I want the crown so I can free Ixia of the military dictatorship."
His reason sounded superficial. Would the people be any freer with him as their ruler? I didn't believe his answer was the real reason.
"What makes you think the Ixian people want you to free them? No government is perfect. Did it ever occur to you that the Ixians might be content under the commander's rule?" I asked.
"Were you content with your life in the north?" Cahill asked.
An intensity held his body rigid while he waited for my response.
"I had unusual circumstances."
"Such as?"
"None of your business."
"Let me guess," Cahill said with a superior tone.
I clutched my arms to keep from punching him.
"A kidnapped southerner with magical abilities? That is unusual. But do you think you were the first person that fourth magician had to rescue? Northerners are born with magical powers, too. My uncle was a master magician, and you know what the commander does to anyone found with power."
Valak's words echoed in my mind. Anyone found in the territory of Ixia with magical power was killed.
Magicians might be hunted in Ixia, but the rest of the citizens had everything they needed.
"We're not that different, Yelena. You were born in Citia and raised in Ixia, and I'm an Ixian raised in Citia. You have returned home. I'm only trying to find mine."
I opened my mouth to reply, but snapped it shut when Iris spoke in my mind.
"Yelena, come to the infirmary right away."
"Are you all right?" I asked.
"I'm fine. Just come."
"Where's the infirmary?"
"Have Cahill show you."
Then her magical energies withdrew. I told Cahill what Iris required. Without hesitation, he removed Kiki's saddle and bridle. We hung them in the tack room before we headed for the center of the keep. I had to jog to keep up with him.
"Did she say what this was about?"
he asked over his shoulder.
"No." We entered a one-story building. The marble walls were a soothing pale blue, resembling ice. A young man in a white uniform moved about the lobby, lighting lanterns. The sun's rays had begun to disappear for the day.
"Where's Iris?" I asked the young man. He looked puzzled.
Cahill said,
"Fourth magician."
"She's with Healer Hayes," he said.
And when we failed to move, the man pointed to a long corridor.
"Down the hall, fifth door on the left."
"Few call her Iris,"
Cahill explained as we hurried down the empty hallway.
We stopped at the fifth one. The door was closed.
"Come in," Iris called before I could knock.
I opened the door. Iris stood next to a man dressed in white. Healer Hayes, perhaps.
A figure lay under a sheet spread over a bed in the center of the room. Bandages shrouded the face.
Leaf hunched in a chair in the corner of the room, looking horrified.
When he spotted me, he asked, "What's she doing here?"
"I asked her to come. She may be able to help," Iris said.
"What's going on?" I asked Iris.
"Tula was found in Burabi near death. Her mind has fled, and we can't reach her,"
Iris explained. We need to find out who did this to her.
I can't feel her, Leaf said. The other Master Magicians can't reach her. She's gone, Fourth Magician. You're just wasting time.
What happened?
Cahill asked.
Beaten, tortured, raped, the healer said. You name something horrible, and it's probably been done to her.
And she was fortunate, Iris said.
How can you call that fortunate? Cahill demanded, his outrage evident in the sudden tautness of his shoulders, the strident tone in his voice.
She escaped with her life, Iris replied. None of the others were so lucky.
How many? I asked, not really wanting to know, but unable to stop the words.
She is the 11th victim. The others were all found dead, brutalized in the same manner.
A look of disgust etched Iris's face.
How can I help? I asked.
Mental healing is my strongest power. Yet you reached the commander and brought him back when I couldn't, she said.
What? Cahill cried. You helped the commander?
His outrage focused on me. I ignored him. But I knew the commander. I had an idea of where to look, I said to Iris. I'm not sure I can help you.
Try anyway. The bodies have been discovered in different towns throughout Citya. We haven't been able to find a reason for the killings, and we have no suspects. We need to catch this monster.
Iris pulled at her hair.
Unfortunately, this is the kind of situation you will be asked to deal with when you become a magician. Consider this a learning experience.
I moved closer to the bed.
May I hold her hand? I asked the healer.
He nodded and pulled the sheet back, revealing the girl's torso. Between the blood-soaked bandages, her skin looked like raw meat. Cahill cursed. I glanced at Leaf. His face remained turned to the wall. Splinted with pieces of wood, each of the girl's fingers must have been broken. I gently took her hand, rubbing my fingertips along her palm. Pulling a thread of power, I closed my eyes and projected my energy to her.
Her mind felt abandoned. The sense that she had fled and would never come back filled the emptiness.
Gray, intangible ghosts floated in her mind. Upon closer examination, each specter represented Tula's memory of a specific horror. The ghosts' faces twisted with pain, terror, and fear. Raw emotions began to sink into my skin. I pushed the ghosts away, concentrating on finding the real Tula, who was most likely hiding someplace where her horrors couldn't reach her. I felt a sensation along my arms as if long grass tickled my skin. The clean, earthy scent of a dew-covered meadow lingered in the air, but I couldn't follow the source. I searched until my energy became depleted, and I could no longer hold the connection. At last, I opened my eyes. I sat on the floor with the girl's hand still clutched in mine.
Sorry, I can't find her, I said.
I told you it was a waste of time, Leaf said.
He rose from his corner.
What did you expect from a northerner?
You can expect me not to give up as easily as you have, I called before he stalked out of the room.
I frowned at his retreating form. There had to be another way to wake Tula.
The healer took the girl's hand from mine and tucked it back under the sheet. I remained on the floor as he and Iris discussed the girl's condition. Her body would heal, they thought, but she would probably never regain her senses. It sounded as though she would be mindless, like the children Rayad and Mogkin had created in Ixia when they had siphoned their magical power, leaving behind nothing but empty, soulless bodies. I shivered at the memory of how the two evil men had tried to break me. I brought my mind back to Tula's problems.
How had I found the commander?
He had retreated to the place of his greatest accomplishment, the place where he felt the happiest and in the most control.
Iris, I interrupted, tell me everything you know about Tula.
She considered for a moment. I could see questions perched on her lips.
Trust me, I sent to her.
It's not much. Her family operates a profitable glass factory right outside Burubi, Iris said. This is their busy season, so they keep the kilns going all the time. Tula was to keep the fire hot during the night. The next morning, when her father came out to work, the coals were cold and Tula was gone. They searched for many days.
She was finally found 12 days later in a farmer's field, barely alive. Our healer in Burabi tended her physical wounds. But her mind was unreachable, so they rushed her here to me.
Iris's disappointment shone on her face. Does Tula have any siblings? I asked.
Several. Why?
I thought hard. Any close to her age?
I think a younger sister.
How much younger?
Not much. 1.5 years, maybe?
Iris guessed. Can you bring her sister here?
Why?
With her sister's help, I might be able to bring Tula back.
I'll send a message.
Iris turned to the healer.
Hayes, let me know if Tula's condition changes.
Hayes nodded, and Iris marched out the door.
Cahill and I followed.
He said nothing as we left the infirmary and stepped into the twilight. With the sun almost gone, the air cooled and a faint breeze touched my face. I sucked in the freshness, trying to dilute the bitter smell of the girl's horror.
Pretty bold, Cahill said, glancing at me. To think you can reach her when a master magician could not.
Cahill strode away. Pretty stupid, I called after his retreating form, to give up before all possible solutions have been tried. Cahill continued to walk without acknowledging my comments.
Fine. He had given me another reason to prove him wrong. Chapter 12. Dreams of Tula's hideous ordeal swirled in my mind that night. Over and over, I fought her demons until, at last, they transformed into my own demon's mocking face. Vivid memories of my own torture and rape at Rayad's hands haunted my sleep. I awoke screaming. My heart hammered against my chest. My nightshirt was drenched with sweat. I wiped my face, focusing on reality. There had to be a way to help Tula. Wide awake, I dressed and went to the infirmary. In Tula's room, Healer Hayes slumped half asleep in a chair. He straightened when I stepped closer to the bed.
Something wrong?
He asked. No, I wanted to...
I cast about for the right explanation.
Spend some time with her.
He yawned.
Can't hurt, and I could use some rest. I'll be in my office at the end of the hall. Wake me if anything changes.
I sat in Hayes's chair and held Tula's hand. Reestablishing our link, I was once again inside her vacant mind. The ghosts of her horrors flickered past.
I studied them, looking for weakness.
When Tula came back, she'd have to deal with each of these ghosts, and I planned to help her banish them.
Iris woke me the next morning. I had rested my head on the edge of Tula's bed.
Have you been here all night?
She asked. Only half. I smiled, rubbing my eyes. I couldn't sleep.
I understand all too well.
Iris smoothed the sheets on Tula's bed.
In fact, I can't stay here doing nothing. I'm going to fetch Tula's sister myself. Bane Bloodgood, second magician, has agreed to continue your training while I'm gone. He usually teaches history and likes to lecture about famous and infamous magicians.
Iris smiled.
He'll give you a ton of books to read, and will quiz you on them, so be sure to finish each of your assignments.
Hayes entered the room.
Anything?
I shook my head. When he started to change Tula's bandages, Iris and I left the room.
I'm leaving this morning, Iris said. Before I go, I'll introduce you to Bane.
I followed her from the infirmary. We headed toward the large building with the peach and yellow marble blocks that was located across from the keep's entrance. The structure housed offices for the keep's administrative staff. It contained various sized conference and meeting rooms, and an office for each master magician. According to Iris, the masters preferred to meet with outsiders and officials in these rooms rather than in their towers. Iris led me into a small meeting room. Four people huddled over a map that was spread open on a conference table. Other maps and charts were hung on the walls. Of the four, I recognized Rose Featherstone and Leaf. Rose wore another long blue dress, and Leaf wore his customary scowl. Beside them stood an elderly man in a navy robe and a young woman with braided hair.
Iris introduced me to the man. He had curly white hair that stuck out at odd angles.
Bane, this is Yelena, your student for the next week or so,
Iris said.
The girl you rescued from the north.
He shook my hand.
Strange mission, that.
A failed mission.
Rose's cold thoughts stabbed my mind.
Yelena should have been killed, not rescued. She's too old to learn.
Yelena's linked to me. She can hear your thoughts.
Iris's annoyance was clear. Rose gazed at me with her amber eyes.
I don't care.
Unflinching, I stared back.
Your mistake.
Iris stepped between us, breaking our eye contact.
And this is Zitora Cowan, third magician,
Iris said, gesturing to the young woman. Zitora's honey brown braids hung to her waist. Instead of shaking my hand, she hugged me.
Welcome, Yelena, Zitora said. Iris tells us you may be able to help us find Tula's attacker.
I'll try, I said. Tula's from my clan, so I would appreciate whatever you can do to help her.
Zitora's pale yellow eyes shone with tears. She turned away.
As you can see, Bane said, indicating the room's contents, we are trying to deduce the methods and means of this killer. A very cunning and shrewd fellow. Unfortunately, that's all we know. Perhaps fresh eyes can spot something we missed.
Bane pointed to the map on the table.
She shouldn't be here, Leaf said. She knows nothing about this.
Before Iris could speak in my defense, I said,
You're right, Leaf. I haven't dealt with this before because a horror like him would not have survived in Ixia for long.
Why don't you just run back to your precious commander and your perfect Ixia and keep your nose out of our troubles? Leaf spat the words at me.
I drew breath to counter, but Iris put a warning hand on my sleeve.
Yelena and Leaf, that's quite enough, Iris said. You're wasting time. Catching this killer is imperative.
Chastised, I peered down at the map on the table. The Sishan lands were divided into 11 territories, one for each clan. City and town locations were marked, as well as the places where the other girls had been found. Some towns had two victims, while others had none. I failed to see a pattern.
The only consistency has been in the victims, Bane said. All are unmarried females, 15 to 16 years old. All were missing for approximately 12 to 14 days. All were taken during the night. Some were stolen right from the very bedrooms they shared with siblings. And no witnesses. None.
My initial gut feeling indicated that magic had been involved, but I didn't want to say as much in front of four master magicians.
We have considered a rogue magician, Iris said. And while we have confirmed the alibis of the magicians who have graduated from our school, we are unable to question those who have one-trick powers.
One trick? I asked.
There are some who have just enough magic to do one thing, like light a candle, but are unable to use magic for anything else, Iris explained. One-tricks do not come to the keep, but they normally use their gift in beneficial ways. Some, though, do use their ability for crime, mostly petty. It's possible this killer's one trick is to turn himself invisible, or be able to walk without making a sound. Something that gives him the upper hand when kidnapping a girl.
Iris's face hardened into an expression of serious determination. A look I recognized with a queasy feeling deep in my stomach. She had worn it when she had tried to kill me in Ixia.
But only for the moment, she vowed.
We have not ruled out a rogue magician, Bane said. History is full of them, and I include recent history.
He nodded to me.
Someday you must tell me of the misdeeds of Kangam in Ixia, and how he met his end. I wish to add his folly to the history books.
Confused at first, it took me a moment to remember that Kangam had changed his name to Mogkin upon fleeing to Ixia.
Speaking of books, Bane said to me, I have some for you in my office.
He turned to Rose. Are we finished here? She gave a curt nod. The other magicians made to leave, but Zitora stayed by the table, tracing a finger over the map of Citia.
Iris, she asked, did you mark Tula's location?
No,
Iris picked up a quill and dipped it into a bottle of red ink.
With all the commotion, I forgot.
She placed a mark on the map and stepped back.
I'll be back in 10 days. Please send word if something happens. Yelena, keep practicing your control.
Yes, sir, I said.
Iris smiled, then left the room. I glanced down at the map to see how far Burabi was from the citadel.
The red ink had not yet dried.
Tula's town resided on the western edge of the Avibian Plains. I had thought Captain Marek exaggerated when he had said the plains were huge, but the map showed that the plains dominated the eastern Sishan landscape. When my eye caught the other red marks, I must have made a sound because Zitora clutched my arm.
What is it? She asked.
A pattern. See? I pointed to the map. All the marks are near the border of the Avibian Plains. The others returned to the table.
Fresh eyes, Bane said, nodding to himself.
It's obvious, now that the map's been updated, Rose said. Annoyance made her voice sharp.
Did anyone search the plains when the girls went missing? I asked.
No one goes into the plains, Zitora said. The Sandseed clan doesn't like visitors, and their strange magic can befuddle the mind. It's best to circumvent them.
Only the Zaltanas are welcomed by the Sandseeds, Rose said. Perhaps Yelena and Leif could visit and determine if anything is amiss.
No need to rush, Bane said. Better to wait until Iris returns with Tula's sister. If Tula awakes and identifies her assailant, we would have the advantage.
What if another girl goes missing in the meantime? Leif asked.
His scowl had deepened, and he seemed upset either by the thought of another victim or the prospect of traveling with me again.
Then, welcome or no, we will send armed searchers into the plains, Bane said.
But you might be too late, I said.
We have some time.
Zitora pulled at one of her braids. That was another pattern we were able to discern. He has the victims for 2 weeks and then waits 4 weeks before claiming a new one.
The thought of another victim filled me with dread and led to a horrible scenario.
What if he comes to the keep to finish what he started? Tula could be in danger.
Let him come. Rose's voice turned icy with determination. I will take care of him.
First, we would have to apprehend him.
Bane tapped the table with a bony finger.
We must post guards in Tula's room.
But it's the hot season, and we're short-handed, Zitora said.
I will tell Cahill to assign some of his men, Rose said. He owes me.
Get them right away, Rose, Bane said. Not a moment to lose. Come now, Yelena. We have work to do.
Bane led me out of the room and down the hallway.
Nice observations, young lady. I see why Iris chose not to kill you.
Has Iris ever chosen to kill? I asked.
Cahill's comment that I had not been the first person Iris had rescued from Ixia weighed on my mind.
Unavoidable at times. Nasty choice overall, but Iris is well suited to that role. She has a unique ability to seize a heart without pain or fear.
Rose has the skill too, but she's much too harsh.
She works best with criminals and their ilk. Leif helps her with those unfortunate criminal investigations. During his schooling at the keep, the masters determined that would be the best use of his unusual power. Zitora, on the other hand, would die rather than harm another. I have never met a sweeter soul.
Bane stopped to unlock a door. He gestured for me to precede him into his office.
Entering the room, I was greeted by a riot of color. A jumble of contraptions and shelves upon shelves of books.
And you, sir, I asked, what place do you hold in this group of magicians?
I teach. I guide. I listen.
He stacked books into a pile. I answer questions. I let the younger magicians go on missions. I tell stories of my eventful past.
Bane smiled. Whether or not my companions wish to hear them.
Now, we'll start you at these few books.
He handed me the stack. I counted 7 texts.
Few?
Obviously my definition of few was different than his. At least most of the books were slim.
Tomorrow is market day, an extra day for study.
Bane's voice held a touch of reverence.
To him, it seemed an extra day to study was similar to receiving a pouch of gold.
Read the first 3 chapters in each book. We'll discuss them the day after tomorrow. Come to my tower after breakfast.
He bustled around a table, looking for something. He pulled a leather pouch from beneath an immense tome.
Yours from Iris.
The pouch jingled as I opened it. Iris had exchanged my Ixion coins for Sishin.
How do I find the market?
I asked. Bane rummaged around his desk until he found a sheet of paper. It was a map of the Citadel.
Use this.
Bane pointed to the market square located near the center of the Citadel.
May I keep this?
Yours.
Now go. Read.
With the indulgence of a father sending his child off to play, he shooed me out the door. I read the book titles as I made my way back to my rooms. The Source of Magic. Magical Mutations. The History of Sishin Magic. Master Level Magicians Throughout the Ages. Misuses of the Power Source. The Magician's Ethical Code. And Windry Bach Greentree, a Biography. I had to admit the titles seemed fascinating, so I started my reading assignments as soon as I reached my rooms. The afternoon flew by, and only the incessant growling of my stomach made me stop to find some food. After dinner, I visited the stables. Topaz and Kiki's heads appeared over their stall doors the moment I arrived.
Apples?
Both horses looked hopeful. Have I ever come without? I asked.
No, Lavender Lady nice, Topaz said.
I fed Topaz and Kiki their apples. After wiping apple juice and horse slobber from my hands, I realized Cahill was late. Deciding not to wait for him, I took Kiki's bridle and riding saddle from the tack room.
Practice?
Kiki sounded as bored as I by the repetitive lessons. How about a walk? I asked.
Fast?
No, slow and steady so I don't fall off. I bridled and saddled Kiki without incident, surprising myself with how much I had learned. Before I could mount, Cahill arrived, his face red and his beard matted with sweat. He looked as though he had run to the stables. I wondered how far he had run, which led me to wonder where he lived in the keep. Which led me, ultimately, to wonder about his childhood. What had it been like to grow up in the magician's keep without any family? Cahill, oblivious to my curiosity, inspected every inch of Kiki's tack, probably searching for a mistake. I smiled in satisfaction when all he found was a crooked stirrup.
All right, then. Since she's saddled, why don't you try mounting?
Cahill said, reminding me to always mount on the horse's left side. I placed my left foot in the stirrup and grabbed the saddle. When he moved to give me a boost up, I stopped him with a look. Kiki stood at 16 hands, tall for a horse, but I wanted to mount her without help. Pushing off with my right foot, I launched myself up and swung my leg over the saddle. Once settled, I looked down at Cahill from what now felt like an uncomfortable height. From this vantage point, the ground at his feet seemed to transform from plush grass to hard and unyielding earth. Cahill lectured about the reins and the proper way to hold them.
If you think you're going to fall, grab her mane, not the saddle.
Why not?
You could pinch a finger. Don't worry, you won't hurt the horse.
Cahill continued to lecture about the correct way to steer the horse and the best way to give stop-and-go commands. He also repeated his advice to grab Kiki's mane if I felt myself falling at least a half dozen more times. Eventually, I tuned him out, gazing around the pasture from my new perspective. I admired the way the sun reflected off a stallion's coat near the far fence, until a change in Cahill's tone caused Kiki's ears to cock forward.
Listening to me? Cahill demanded.
What?
Yelena, this is very important. If you don't know how to...
Cahill, I interrupted. I don't need commands. All I have to do is ask Kiki. He stared at me as if I had spoken another language.
Watch.
I held the reins in front of me as Cahill had instructed. Kiki's left ear cocked back, the other pointed forward. She turned her head slightly to the left so she could see me fully.
Walk around the pasture? I asked her. Near the fence.
Kiki started to move. Her steps rocked me from side to side. I let her find the path as I enjoyed the view. As we circled the pasture, I heard Cahill yell,
"Heels down! Straighten up!"
Eventually, we moved out of his sight.
Fast?
Kiki asked. Not yet.
A glint of sunlight and a blur of motion from outside the fence caught my eye. Kiki shied, turning sharply to the right. I flew left.
Bad smell. Bad thing.
Instinctively, I grabbed her mane, stopping my fall. My right leg stretched across the saddle as I hung from Kiki's side, clutching her coarse brown hair. Kiki's muscles bunched and she danced to the side. I caught a glimpse of what had startled her.
Stop. A man.
She held still, but her legs trembled in terror.
Bad man. Shiny thing.
I yanked myself upright in the saddle. Bad man. Run. Chapter 13. Kiki took off. I held onto her mane and tried to stay in the saddle. After a few strides, I looked behind just in time to see Gold's sword flash in the sunlight. When Cahill saw us racing across the pasture, he raised his arms and shouted, "Whoa! Whoa!" Kiki galloped straight for him, her mind so focused on survival that I had to wait for Gold's scent to disappear before she would respond to my calming thoughts.
"Man gone. It's okay," I said to her.
I patted her on the neck and whispered the same thing into her ear. She settled and halted mere inches from Cahill.
"At least you stayed on the horse."
He grabbed Kiki's reins.
"What happened?"
I jumped down from the saddle and examined Cahill. He didn't look surprised. In fact, he seemed mildly amused. "What do you think happened?" I countered.
"Kiki spooked at something. I told you horses are skittish, but you had to go off before you were ready."
Something in Cahill's eyes made me suspicious.
"Did you send Gold to ambush me?" I demanded.
"Gold?"
Cahill seemed taken aback.
"No, I..."
"You set that up. You wanted Kiki to panic."
Cahill frowned.
"I wanted you to learn. Horses are prey animals and will react to the slightest noise, scent, or movement long before any logic can kick in. And if you'd fallen, you would know it's not terrible. Then you wouldn't be afraid to fall or bail off a horse when you need to."
"How nice for you that you've already forgotten I've fallen off a horse. Actually shoved off a horse. Your horse, to be exact. It's a memory I wish I could forget so easily." Cahill had the decency to look contrite. "So sending Gull was a lesson?" I asked.
"I don't believe it, Cahill. He was armed."
Fury flashed across Cahill's face.
"I asked Erend to help me. Gull is supposed to be guarding Tula. I'll deal with him."
"Don't bother. I can take care of Gull. At least he had the decency to warn me of his plans. Unlike others." I glared at Cahill, snatched the reins from his hands, and strode back to the stable with Kiki. It had been a mistake to go to my lesson unarmed. I had foolishly assumed Gull wouldn't try to attack me while I was with Cahill. Lesson learned. Cahill should be proud, even if it wasn't the lesson he intended. The next morning, I set out to find the market. I kept a wary eye on the people in the streets of the citadel. All seemed headed toward the center square. Amazed by the number of people crowding around the market stands, I hesitated. I didn't want to push my way through them, yet I needed to shop. I spotted a few of the keep's workers and had decided to ask one of them for assistance when I felt a tug on my sleeve. Spinning around, I reached for my bow on my backpack. The small boy flinched. I recognized him as the beggar I had given my Sishin coins to on my first day in the Citadel.
"Sorry, you startled me," I said.
He relaxed.
"Lovely lady, can you spare a copper?"
Remembering what Iris had said about the beggars, I thought of an idea. "How about you help me and I'll help you?" Wariness filled his eyes. In that instant, he seemed to grow 10 years older. My heart broke, and I wanted to empty my purse into his hands. Instead, I said, "I'm new here. I'm looking to buy paper and ink. Do you know a good merchant?" He seemed to catch on.
"Marabella's has the finest stationery," he said, his eyes alight. "I'll show you."
"Wait, what's your name?" He hesitated, and then lowered his eyes to the ground.
"Fisk," he mumbled.
I dropped to one knee. Looking him in the eyes, I offered my hand. "Greetings, Fisk. I'm Yelena." He grasped my hand with both of his mouth agape with astonishment. I guess he was close to 9 years old.
Fisk recovered with a shake of his head. He then led me to a young girl's table at the edge of the square. I purchased writing paper, a stylus, and some black ink, then gave Fisk a Sishan copper for his help.
As the morning wore on, Fisk guided me to other stands for more supplies, and soon other children were hired to help carry my packages. When I finished shopping, I surveyed my entourage. 6 grubby children smiled at me despite the heat and searing sun. I suspected that one boy was Fisk's younger brother. They had the same light brown eyes.
The other 2 boys may have been his cousins.
Greasy strands of hair hid most of the 2 girls' faces, so it was impossible to tell if they were related to Fisk. I realized then that I was reluctant to return to the keep.
Sensing my mood, Fisk asked, "Lovely Yelena, would you like a tour of the citadel?"
I nodded. The midday heat had emptied the market, but as I followed the children through the deserted streets, a feeling of unease settled over me. What if they were leading me into a trap? My hand sought the handle of my switchblade. Concentrating, I pulled a thread of power and projected my awareness. My mind touched life all around me. Most of the Citadel citizens resided inside, their thoughts focused on finding a cool spot or a quiet activity while they waited for the sun to set. No threats. No ambushes. I heard the sound of water before I saw the fountain.
With squeals of delight, the children put down my packages and ran to the spray. Fisk stayed by my side, though, taking his role as tour guide seriously. "That's the Unity Fountain," he said.
A circle of water spouts surrounded a huge stone sphere with large holes spaced evenly across its surface. Nestled inside the sphere, I could see another smaller sphere with holes of its own. The deep green color of the fountain wasn't veined like the marble of the citadel's walls, yet the stone hinted that it held something else within.
"Marble?" I asked Fisk. "Jade mined from the Emerald Mountains. This is the largest piece of pure jade ever found. It took a year to get it here, and because jade is so hard, it took over 5 years to carve it with diamond-tipped chisels. There are 11 spheres, and all of them were carved inside that one stone."
"Amazing." I moved closer to the fountain so I could see the other spheres. The cool mist felt good against my hot skin.
"Why 11? I asked. Fisk stood next to me. "One sphere for each clan, and one water spout for each clan. Water represents life," he explained. "See the carvings on the outer circle?"
I risked getting soaked to examine the intricate lines on the fountain.
"Mythical creatures. Each represents one master magician. Ying Lung, a sky dragon for first magician. Fei Lian, a wind leopard for second. Qiu Tuan, a unicorn for third. And Piang, a hawk for fourth."
"Why those creatures?" I asked, remembering that Iris had worn a hawk mask when she had visited Ixia as part of the Sishan delegation.
"When magicians reach the master level, they endure a series of tests."
Fisk sounded as if he quoted a schoolbook.
"During that time, they travel through the underworld and meet their guide. This creature not only shows them through the underworld, but guides them throughout life."
"Do you believe that? It sounded like a fairy tale to me." When the commander had taken power in Ixia, superstitions and religious beliefs had been discouraged. If anyone still believed, they kept quiet and worshipped in secret. Fisk shrugged.
"I know something happens to the magicians during the test because my father's seen it. He used to work at the keep."
A hardness settled on Fisk's face, so I didn't ask any more questions.
But I wondered about the creatures.
Iris had disguised herself as a hawk mistress in Ixia. She wore the proper uniform to blend in with the Ixian. Perhaps she also worked with the commander's hawks.
"It's good luck to drink from the fountain," Fisk said.
Then he ran to his friends who played in the water, opening their mouths to catch the spray.
After a moment's hesitation, I joined them. The water tasted fresh as if laced with strong minerals like an elixir of life.
I drank deeply. I could use a little good luck. When the children finished playing, Fisk led me to another fountain. This one was carved from rare white jade. 15 horses, frozen in motion, circled a large spout of water. Although Fisk didn't complain, I could see that the heat had finally worn him out. Still, when I offered to carry my purchases back to the keep, all the children refused, saying they would take them as promised. On the way back, I sensed Topaz's worry the moment before I saw Cahill rounding the corner. My parade of children stepped to the side of the road as Cahill advanced, stopping Topaz in front of us.
"Yelena, where have you been?" he demanded.
I glared at him.
"Shopping."
"Why? Do you have another surprise test for me?" He ignored my question, staring instead at my companions. The children shrank against the wall, trying to make themselves as small as possible.
"The market has been closed for hours. What have you been doing?" he asked.
"None of your business." His gaze snapped to me.
"Yes, it is. This is your first trip into the Citadel alone. You could have been robbed. You could have gotten lost. When you didn't come back, I thought the worst."
Cahill's eyes slid back to the children.
"I can take care of myself."
I glanced at Fisk.
"Lead on," I said. Fisk nodded and started down the street. The other children and I followed him.
Cahill snorted and dismounted.
Taking Topaz's reins, he walked beside me, but he couldn't remain quiet.
"Your choice of escorts will lead to trouble," he said. "Every time you go into the Citadel, they'll descend on you like parasites, sucking you dry."
Loathing filled his face.
"Another lesson?" I asked, not hiding my sarcasm.
"Just trying to help."
Anger tightened his voice.
"You can stop. Stick to what you know, Cahill. If it doesn't involve horses, then I don't need your assistance."
He let his breath out in a long huff. From the corner of my eye, I saw him swallow his temper. Impressive.
"You're still mad at me," he said.
"Why would I be?"
"For not believing you about being a spy."
When I didn't say anything, he continued.
"For what happened with First Magician. I know it must have been awful."
"Awful?" Stopping in the middle of the street, I rounded on Cahill.
"What do you know? Has she done it to you?"
"No."
"Then you have no idea what you're talking about. Imagine being helpless and stripped bare, your thoughts and feelings exposed to a ruthless, intimate scrutiny." His eyes widened in shock.
"But she said you fought her off, that she couldn't fully read you."
I shuddered at the thought of Rose going deeper, understanding why Cahill had claimed that her interrogation left some people with mental damage. "It's worse than being raped, Cahill."
"I know. I've suffered both."
He gaped.
"Is that why?"
"What? Go ahead. Ask." I wasn't about to spare him to make him feel better.
"Why you stayed in your room those first 3 days?"
I nodded. Iris told me I was sulking, but I couldn't stand the thought of anyone even looking at me. Topaz put his head over my shoulder. I rubbed my cheek on his soft face. My anger at Cahill had blocked out the horse's thoughts. Now I opened my mind to him.
"Lavender Lady's safe."
Topaz's pleasure filled my mind.
"Apple?"
I smiled. "Later."
Cahill watched us with a strange expression on his face.
"You only smile at the horses."
I couldn't tell if he was jealous or sad.
"What Rose... I... did to you. Is that why you keep everyone at arm's length?"
Cahill asked.
"Not entirely.
And not everyone."
"Who else do you smile at?"
"Iris."
He nodded as if he had expected that answer.
"Anyone else?"
My fingers touched the bump my chest made by the butterfly pendant under my shirt.
Valak would get more from me than a smile.
But I said, "My friends in the north."
"The ones who taught you to fight?"
"Yes."
"How about the person who gave you that necklace?"
I jerked my hand away. "How did you know about my necklace?" I demanded.
"It fell out while you were unconscious."
I frowned, remembering Cahill had carried me to my room after Rose's interrogation.
"Guess I shouldn't have reminded you about that," he said. "But I was right about it being a gift, wasn't I?"
"It's none of your business. Cahill, you're acting like we're friends. We're not friends." The children waited for us at an intersection. I started toward them. Cahill caught up. We walked on in silence. When we reached the keep, I took my packages from the children and paid them each 2 coppers. I grinned at Fisk and then glanced at Cahill, feeling self-conscious about my smiles. "See you on the next market day," I said to Fisk, and tell your friends they'll each get an extra copper if they show up clean. He waved. I watched the group of children disappear. They probably knew all the back alleys and secret ways inside the Citadel. That knowledge might be useful one day. I would have to ask Fisk to show me. Having grown up in the Citadel, Cahill probably knew the shortcuts, too, but I wouldn't ask him. Not when he had such a dour expression. What now? I asked. He sighed.
Why do you always have to make things so difficult?
You started this, remember? Not me. He shook his head.
Why don't we start over? We've been at odds from the start. What can I do to receive one of your rare smiles?
Why do you want one? If you're hoping that we'll become friends and I'll confide in you all the military secrets of Ixia, don't bother.
No, that's not what I want. I want things to be different between us.
Different how? Cahill looked around as if searching for the right words.
Better. Less hostility. Friendlier. Conversations instead of arguments.
After what you put me through?
I'm sorry, Yelena.
The words tore from his throat as if it pained him to say them.
I'm sorry I didn't believe you when you said you weren't a spy. I'm sorry I asked First Magician to...
He swallowed.
To rape your mind.
I turned my face away from him. That apology is weeks old, Cahill. Why bother now? He sighed.
Plans are being made for the New Beginnings feast.
Some hitch in Cahill's voice caused me to look at him. He wrapped and unwrapped Topaz's leather reins around his hands.
It's a feast to celebrate the beginning of the cooling season and the new school year. A chance for everyone to get together and start anew.
Cahill's blue eyes searched mine.
In all these years, I have never wanted to take anyone with me. I never had anyone who I wanted to have by my side. Yet when I overheard the cooks discussing the feast's menu this morning, your image filled my mind. Come with me, Yelena.
Chapter 14. Cahill's words struck me like a physical blow. I jerked back a step. His face saddened at my reaction.
I guess that's a no. We'd probably just fight all night anyway.
He began to walk away. Cahill, wait, I said, catching up to him. You surprised me. An understatement for sure. I had believed that the only thing Cahill wanted from me was information about Ixia. This invitation might still be a ploy, but for the first time I saw a softness behind his eyes. I put my hand on his arm. He stopped. Does everyone go to this New Beginnings feast? I asked him.
Yes. It's a good way for the new students to meet their teachers and a chance for everyone to get reacquainted. I'm going because I'll be teaching the senior and apprentice classes about horsemanship.
So I'm not your first student?
No, but you've been my most stubborn one.
He smiled ruefully. I smiled in return. Cahill's eyes lit up. Okay, Cahill, in the spirit of this New Beginnings feast, let's start over. I'm willing to accompany you to the feast as the first step in our new friendship. Besides, the thought of going alone to meet my fellow students seemed daunting.
Friendship?
That's all I can offer.
Because of the person who gave you that butterfly pendant? He asked.
Yes.
And what did you give him in return?
I wanted to snap that it was none of his business, but I controlled my temper. If we were going to be friends, he needed to know the truth. My heart. I could have added my body, my trust, and my soul. He looked at me for a moment.
Guess I'll have to be content with friendship.
He grinned.
Does this mean you won't be so difficult anymore?
Don't count on it. He laughed and helped me carry my market purchases back to my rooms. I spent the rest of the night reading the chapters Bane had assigned, stopping on occasion to think about Cahill's new role as friend in my life. I enjoyed my fascinating mornings with Bane Bloodgood. Scission history extended back for centuries. The 11 Scission clans fought with each other for decades until Windry Greentree, a master magician, united them and formed the Council of Elders. I realized, to my dismay and to Bane's delight, that I had a great deal of study ahead of me to learn the full history. And their mythology alone
populated with creatures, demons, and legends, would take years of lessons to know them all. Bane also explained the structure of the school.
Every student has a magician as a mentor. That mentor oversees the student's learning. He teaches, he guides, he schedules classes with other magicians who have more expertise in certain subjects.
How many students are in each class? I asked. Bane swept his hand through the air, indicating the room, empty except for us. We sat in an open circular chamber at the base of his tower. Books lined the walls in neat piles, and writing projects covered each of Bane's 4 ink-stained work tables. The metal rings of Bane's astrolabe glowed in the morning sunlight. I perched on the edge of his wide desk. Small writing tools and piles of papers rested on the top in an organized arrangement. A white seashell appeared to be his only decoration. Sitting across from me, Bane wore a deep purple robe that drank in the light. His diverse collection of robes amazed me. So far, he was the only magician I'd seen that wore a formal robe on a daily basis.
"We are a class," he said. "There can be up to 4 students, but no more. You will not see rows upon rows of students listening to a lecturer in this school. We teach using hands-on learning and small groups."
"How many students does each mentor have?"
"No more than 4 for those who have experience. Only 1 for the new magicians."
"How many do the master magicians teach?" I was dreading the day when I would have to share Iris.
"Ah."
He paused. For once, Bane seemed at a loss for words.
"The masters do not mentor students.
We are needed in council meetings.
We aid Citia. We recruit prospective students. But occasionally, a student comes along that piques our interest."
He gazed at me as if deciding how much he should tell me.
"I have grown weary of council meetings, so I have transferred all my energies to teaching. This year, I have 2 students. Rose has chosen only 1 since she became first magician. Zetora has none. She is adjusting. She only became a master last year."
"And Iris?"
"You're her first."
"Just me?" I asked in amazement. He nodded. "You said Rose chose 1. Who?"
"Your brother, Leif."
Evidence that the keep prepared for an invasion of returning students mounted as the week progressed. Servants scurried to air out rooms and dorms. The kitchen buzzed with activity as the staff prepared for the feast. Even the citadel streets hummed with life as residents returned. In the evenings, laughter and music floated on the cooling air. As I waited for Iris to return from fetching Tula's sister, I spent my mornings with Bane, my afternoons studying, and my evenings with Cahill and Kiki. My riding had advanced from walking Kiki to trotting, a bone-jarring gait that left me stiff and sore at the end of the day. Every night I sat with Tula, connecting with her and lending her my support. Her mind remained vacant, but her brutalized body healed by leaps and bounds.
"Do you have healing powers?" Hayes asked me one night. "Her physical progress has been amazing. More like the work of 2 healers."
I considered his question.
"I don't know. I've never tried."
"Perhaps you've been helping her heal without realizing it. Would you like to find out?"
"I don't want to hurt her," I said, remembering my failed attempts to move a chair.
"I won't let you."
Hayes smiled as he picked up Tula's left hand. The splints on her right hand were gone, but the fingers on her left were still swollen and bruised.
"I have only enough energy to mend a few bones a day. Usually we let the body heal on its own, but for serious injuries we speed up the process."
"How?"
"I draw power to me. Then I focus on the injury. Skin and muscle disappear before my eyes, revealing the bones. I use the power to encourage the bone to mend. It works the same for other injuries. My eyes will only see the wound. It is truly wonderful."
Hayes's eyes glowed with purpose, but when they shifted to Tula, they dimmed.
"Unfortunately, some injuries just can't be healed, and the mind is so complex that any damage is usually permanent.
We have a few mind healers.
Fourth magician is the strongest of these,
but even she can only do so much. As Hayes focused on Tula, I felt the air around me thicken and pulsate. Drawing a breath became an effort. Then Hayes closed his eyes. Without thinking, I linked my mind with his. Through him, I saw Tula's hand. Her skin became translucent, showing the battered pink fibrous muscles attached to the bones. I saw strands of power, thin as spider webs, wrapped around Hayes's hands. He wove the webs around the crack in Tula's bone. As I watched, the crack disappeared, and then the muscles healed. I broke the mental connection to Hayes and looked at Tula. The bruises had faded from her now straight index finger. The air thinned as the power faded. His forehead shone with sweat, and his breath puffed from the effort he just expended. "Now you try," he said. I moved closer to Tula and took her hand from Hayes. Holding her middle finger, I rubbed it lightly with my thumb as I pulled power to me, revealing the bone. Hayes gasped. I paused.
"Go on," he said.
My strands of power were rope thick. When I applied the strands to the bone, they wrapped around it like a noose. I pulled back, fearing her finger would snap in half. Placing her hand back on the bed, I looked at Hayes. "Sorry, I don't have full control of my magic yet." He stared at Tula's hand.
"Look."
Both fingers appeared to have been healed.
"How do you feel?" he asked.
Using magic usually left me tired, but I really hadn't used any. Or had I? "About the same."
"Three healings, and I need to nap."
Hayes shook his head. His dark hair fell into his eyes. He swiped his bangs back with an impatient hand.
"You just mended a bone effortlessly." "Fate be with us," he said. Awe and fear roughened his voice. "Once you have full control, you may be able to wake the dead."
Chapter 15. Fear surged through me, leaving my muscles trembling. "No," I said to Hayes, "you must be mistaken. No one can wake the dead." Hayes rubbed a hand over his tired eyes, reconsidering.
"Perhaps I spoke rashly," he agreed. "Only one person in our history could revive the dead."
He shuddered.
"And the results were truly horrible."
I wanted to ask more questions, but Hayes bolted toward the door, insisting he had work to do. Feeling odd and unsettled, I peered at Tula's motionless form. Through her blanket and skin, I could see each of her injuries. It seemed now that I had learned this new ability, I couldn't turn it off. The fractures, sprains, bruises all pulsed with an urgent red light. The more I studied the light, the more it drew my mind in, and I felt Tula's physical pain soak into me. In sudden agony, I collapsed onto the floor. Curling into a ball, I squeezed my eyes shut. A small part of me knew the pain was imaginary, but in panic, I still tried to push the torment away. I pulled power from the source. Magic filled me. The buildup crackled across my skin like fire. I released the power. My scream resounded through the room as cool relief swept through me, quenching my pain. Drained of energy, I remained on the floor, panting.
"Yelena, are you all right?"
I opened my eyes. Hayes hovered over me in concern. I nodded. "Tula?" He left my side.
"She's fine."
I sat up. The room spun for a moment, but I forced myself to focus.
"What happened?" Hayes asked.
I wanted to say that I had lost control, to explain that my old survival instincts had kicked in, reacting to the pain without conscious thought. But it hadn't felt quite like that, and to admit that I had lost control would be dangerous. Uncontrolled magicians could damage the power source, and the masters would be forced to kill me. Instead, I clamped my lips together, trying to bring some order to my jumbled thoughts. Before I could speak, Hayes said,
"You healed her other two fingers."
He stood next to Tula's bed and held her left hand up. Hayes inspected her fingers before laying her arm across her stomach. Then he turned to me with a frown.
"You shouldn't have tried that without me.
No wonder you screamed. You gathered too much power and had to release it.
Hayes gestured to my prone form.
A beginner's mistake, and now you're exhausted. You really need to work on your control.
While helping me to my feet, Hayes's frown softened into what might have been relief.
You have the ability to heal, but need guidance. I misjudged you at first, thinking you might be a soul finder.
Hayes huffed out a laugh.
Next time, wait for me, okay?
Not trusting myself to speak, I nodded. Hayes guided me toward the door.
Get some rest. You'll probably be weak for a few days.
As I shuffled to the apprentice's wing, I replayed the events in my mind, and by the time I collapsed into my bed, I managed to almost convince myself that Hayes's explanation was correct. Almost. Fatigue dogged me all through the next day. Bane's morning lesson passed in a blur. Instead of reading, I napped the afternoon away and fought to stay awake while riding Kiki that night. Cahill's bellowing eventually pierced the fog in my mind.
Yelena!
I looked at him as if seeing him for the first time that evening. Coated with dirt and horsehair, his once white cotton shirt clung to his muscular frame. Annoyance creased his forehead. His mouth moved in speech, but it took me a moment to discern his words.
Distracted? Exhausted? And you're going to get hurt.
Hurt? I asked.
Yes, hurt. When you fall asleep in the saddle and slide off the horse.
Cahill controlled his frustration, but I could see by the way he pumped his clenched fists that he wanted to shake some sense into me.
Lavender Lady tired, Kiki agreed. Forgot apples.
Yelena, go home.
Cahill took Kiki's reins to hold her steady while I dismounted.
Home.
Unbidden, the image of my small room in the commander's castle jumped into my mind, followed by the memory of Valak's smiling face. I could use some of his energy right now.
Are you all right?
I gazed into Cahill's light blue eyes. They were pale in comparison to Valak's vibrant sapphire color.
Yes. I'm just a little tired.
A little?
Cahill laughed.
Go get some sleep. I'll take care of Kiki. You'll need your energy for tomorrow night.
Tomorrow?
The New Beginnings Feast, remember?
I didn't realize it was so soon.
Prepare yourself for an invasion of students and magicians. Come morning, our peace and quiet will be gone.
Cahill led Kiki toward the stable. I promised her extra apples before our next lesson as I headed to my rooms. Apprehension about the feast, though, gnawed through my fatigue even as I climbed into bed. Half asleep, the shock of realizing that I didn't own the proper attire for a feast nearly jolted me awake. What did one wear to a feast anyway? Would I have to don my formal apprentice robe, I wondered, then sighed. Too tired to worry about things like clothes, I rolled over. More important worries, such as the need to take control of my magic, pushed out all others. A frenzy of activity filled the campus the next morning. I skirted groups of people carrying parcels as I walked to Bane's tower. Opening the door to his study, I started to ask Bane about the arriving students, but stopped when I saw he had two visitors. From behind his desk, Bane gestured me in.
Yelena, these are my students. Dax Greenblade, a fellow apprentice, and Gelsey Moon, a novice.
With an open hand, he pointed to each in turn. They nodded in greeting. Their serious expressions looked out of place on such young faces. I guessed that Dax was 18 years old, while the girl must have been about 15.
Have you chosen another student, Master Bloodgood?
Gelsey asked. She tugged absently on the white lace at the end of her sleeve. Violet and white swirls patterned both her blouse and long skirt.
No, Yelena is working with another, Bane said.
I had to suppress a grin as each relaxed. Dax flashed me a smile. Gelsey, though, seemed intrigued with me.
Who is your mentor? She asked.
Iris. Master Jewel Rose.
The two students seemed as surprised as I had been when Bane told me about Iris.
What's your clan? Gelsey asked.
Zaltana.
Another distant cousin of Leif's? Dax asked. You're a little old to start training. What strange power do you have?
His tone implied curiosity and humor, but Bane said,
Dax, that's inappropriate. She's Leaf's sister.
Ah. Dax studied me with keen interest. Do we have a lesson this morning? I asked Bane. The magician perked up at my question. He instructed Dax to go unpack, but he asked Gelsey to remain. Her heart-shaped face paled for a moment before she steadied herself, smoothing her shoulder-length copper curls.
I fear Iris will be back soon and reclaim you,
Bane said to me with a smile.
Gelsey's focus for this semester is to learn how to communicate magically with other magicians. Iris has told me this is your strongest ability. Therefore, I would like your assistance with introducing this skill to my student.
Gelsey's eyes widened. Her long, thick eyelashes touched her brows.
I'll do what I can, I said.
Bane rummaged through one of his desk's drawers and pulled a small burlap sack from it. He set the bag on the desk and opened it, taking out two brown lumps.
We'll use Theobroma for the first lesson, he said.
The lumps triggered memories of my time in Ixia. Theobroma was the southern name for Criollo, a delicious sweet that had the unfortunate effect of opening a person's mind to magical influences. General Brazel had used the nutty-flavored dessert to bypass the commander's strong will, so Brazel's magician, Mogken, could gain control of the commander's mind. Bane handed me one of the Theobroma pieces and he gave the other to Gelsey. Then he told us to sit in the two chairs that faced each other. While I would have enjoyed eating the mouth-coating sweet, I thought it unnecessary. Can we try without it first? I asked. Bane's bushy gray eyebrows rose as he considered my question.
You don't need it to make an initial connection?
I thought about the different people and horses I had linked with.
So far, no. All right. Yelena, I want you to try to connect with Gelsey.
Dredging some energy from my tired body, I pulled a thread of power and directed it to the girl, projecting my awareness to her. I sensed her apprehension about working with this strange woman from Ixia in her mind.
Hello, I said.
She jumped in shock.
To help her relax, I said, I was born in the Ilias jungle. Where did you grow up?
Gelsey formed an image of a small village wrapped in fog in her mind.
We reside in the foothills of the Emerald Mountains. Every morning our house is enveloped in the mist from the mountains.
I showed her my parents' dwelling in the trees. We talked about siblings. A middle child, Gelsey had two older sisters and two younger brothers, but she was the only one in her family to develop magical powers.
Bane watched us in silence, then he interrupted. Break the connection now. Sapped of energy, I dragged my awareness back. Gelsey, it is your turn to make contact with Yelena.
She closed her eyes, and I sensed her seeking my mind. All I would need to do was tug on her awareness.
Do not help her, Bane warned me.
Instead, I kept my mind open, but she failed to reach me.
Not to worry, Bane consoled her. The first time is the hardest. That is why we use Theobroma.
Bane's gray eyes studied me with kindness.
We will try again another time. Gelsey, go unpack and get settled.
After she left Bane's tower, he said,
No doubt you wore yourself out yesterday. Hayes mentioned something to me.
Tell me what happened, he instructed. I told him about the pain and the power. It seems I don't have full control yet, I offered, waiting to see if he would chastise me. If my actions had truly been an uncontrolled burst, I knew the other master magicians would have felt it, and certain that Rose would have acted without hesitation on that knowledge.
A lesson learned, Bane said. Repairing injuries takes immense effort. Enough for today. I'll see you tonight at the feast.
The feast? I had forgotten. Again. What should I... I stopped, feeling awkward and silly to be asking about clothing. Bane smiled in sympathy.
No expertise in that matter, he said, seeming to read my mind. Zitora will enjoy helping you. She's at loose ends this year and will welcome some company.
I thought she was busy with council business.
She is, but she's transitioning from 5 years of being a student to being on her own. Having no time to be a mentor doesn't mean she won't have time to make a friend.
I left Bane's tower and headed towards Zatora's in the northeast corner of the keep. Lively groups filled the campus walkways, and people hurried past me in every direction. My quiet walks through the keep were at an end, yet I felt energized by all the activity. Zatora greeted me with a bright smile that only dimmed when we discussed Tula's condition. Talk eventually turned to the upcoming festivities, and I inquired about appropriate dress. The formal robes are only for the boring school functions, Zatora said. Do tell me you have something pretty to wear. When I shook my head, she transformed into a mother hen and set about finding me some clothes. Thank fate you're my size, Zatora said with glee. Despite my protests, she dragged me up 2 flights to her bedroom and loaded my arms with dresses, skirts, and lacy blouses. Zatora propped her hands on her hips, considering my boots. Those will not do. They're comfortable and I can move easily in them, I said.
A challenge, then. I'll be right back.
She disappeared into another room while I waited in her bedroom on the 3rd floor of her tower. Soft pastel paintings of flowers hung on the walls. Oversized pillows graced her canopy bed. The room oozed comfort like open arms wrapping me in a hug. With a triumphant shout, Zatora sauntered into the room, a pair of black sandals raised high for admiration. Rubber soles, soft leather, and a small heel. Perfect for dancing all night long, she laughed. I don't know how to dance, I said. Doesn't matter. You have a natural grace. Watch the others and follow. Zatora added the sandals to the top of my pile.
I really can't take all of this.
I tried to give the clothes back. I came for advice, not your entire wardrobe. I planned to go to the market. With the return of the Citadel's residents, the shops remained open every day. She shooed me away. Hardly made a dent in my armoire. I'm a collector of clothes. I can't pass a dress shop without finding something I must have. At least let me pay.
Stop.
She raised her hand.
I'll make it easier for you. Tomorrow I'm leaving on a mission for the council, and,
much to my chagrin, I will have an escort of 4 soldiers. Iris and Rose can gallivant all over Citia by themselves, and they're assigned all the fun secret missions. But the council worries about me, so I'm limited to escorted missions. She huffed with frustration.
I've seen you practicing with your bow near the stable. How about I exchange my clothes for some lessons in self-defense?
Okay. But why didn't you learn how to defend yourself while a student here?
I hated the master of arms, she said with a deep frown. A bully who turned the teaching sessions into torture sessions. He enjoyed inflicting pain. I avoided him at all costs. When the masters realized I had strong powers, they focused more on my learning.
Who's the arms master?
One of the northerners with Cahill. Goals, his name.
Zatora shuddered with revulsion.
Although he wasn't as bad as the master test.
She paused as a cringe of horror crossed her face. Then she jerked her head as if dislodging unwanted memories.
Anyway, Rose offered to teach me, but I'd rather have you as my instructor.
She flashed me a conspiratorial smirk.
Having agreed to the exchange, I maneuvered down Zatora's tower steps with the bundle of her clothes heaped in my arms.
So burdened, I headed toward my rooms.
On the way, I wondered about the master test.
Fisk, the beggar boy, had also mentioned it. I would have to ask Iris. The courtyard across from my quarters buzzed with students. A few boys tossed a ball, while others lounged on the grass or talked in groups. Hampered by Zatora's clothes, I fumbled at my door.
Hey, you! Someone called.
I looked around and spotted a group of girls gesturing at me. The first-year barracks are that way, one of the girls with long blonde hair pointed. This is for apprentices only. Thanks, but this is my room, I called, turning back. I managed to get the door open before I felt a prickle of power along my spine. Tossing the clothing onto the floor, I spun around. A group of students stood mere inches from me.
You don't belong here, said the long-haired girl.
A dangerous shine lit her violet eyes.
You're new. I know everybody, and new students go to the first-year barracks. You have to earn a room here.
Persuasive magic emanated from her.
A strong desire to pack my belongings and move to the first-year dorms coursed through my mind and pressed against my body. I deflected her magical command by strengthening my mental defenses. She grunted in outrage. A look passed among her companions. Power built as they readied to join in. I braced for another attack, but before they could use their combined power, another voice cut through the throng.
"What's going on here?"
The power dissipated in a stiff wave as Dax Greenblade pushed his lean, muscular body through the group, staring down at the others with his bottle-green eyes. In the sunlight, his honey-brown skin made his face appear older.
"She doesn't belong here," the girl repeated.
"Yelena is fourth magician's student," Dax said. "She's been assigned to this wing."
"But that's not fair," the girl whined. "You have to earn the right to be here."
"And who's to say she hasn't?" Dax asked.
"If you believe fourth magician is an error, I suggest you take it up with her."
An uncomfortable silence followed before the group returned to the courtyard. Dax stayed beside me.
"Thanks," I said.
The group huddled in a tight pack, casting nasty looks my way as they talked. "Guess I haven't made any friends."
3 points against you, I'm afraid.
One, Dax held up a long, slender finger. You're new. Two, fourth magician's your mentor. Any student selected by a master is guaranteed to be the subject of jealousy. If you're looking for friends, I'm afraid Gelsey and I are your only choices.
What's the third point?
He smiled sardonically.
Rumors and speculation. The students will dig up every bit of information they can on you and why you're here. It doesn't matter if the information is true or not. In fact, the stranger the tidbits, the better. And I have a feeling from what I already heard, your tidbits are quite juicy and should inflame the gossip all the more.
I studied his face. Lines of concern creased his forehead, and I saw no signs of deceit.
Tidbits? You're Leaf's lost sister. You're older than all the students, and you're extremely powerful.
I looked at him in surprise.
Me? Powerful? I didn't come over to help you. I came to protect them.
He inclined his head toward the group in the courtyard.
Before I could comment, Dax pointed to a room 5 doors down from mine. Come any time for any reason. Gelsey is in the novice barracks near the west wall.
Dax waved goodbye and strode toward his room. The group's hostility transferred briefly to his back before returning to me. I closed my door.
Great. Day one and already the outcast.
But did I care? Here to learn and not to make friends, I thought it wouldn't matter once lessons started. By then, the students would be too busy to pay any attention to me. I sorted through Zatora's clothes, choosing a long black skirt and a red and black V-neck blouse. The shirt had 2 layers of material, a pattern of fine black lace over red silk. I tried on the outfit. Deciding to leave my bow behind during the feast, I cut a slit in one of the skirt's pockets for quick access to my switchblade. The sandals were a little big, so I poked another hole in the strap. Until I looked at myself in the mirror, I hadn't realized I wore Commander Ambrose's colors, the same combination as my northern uniform. I considered another outfit, even tried on different clothes, but I felt the most comfortable in my first choice. Pulling my hair from its braid, I scowled at the limp mess. The year before I had cut out the snarls and tangles, and now the ends had grown in ragged. My black hair now reached past my shoulders. It would need a good trim and washing. I changed back into my day clothes and left my rooms to feed the promised apples to Topaz and Kiki. Conversation in the courtyard ceased as I emerged. Ignoring them, I set out for the stable. I would stop by the baths on my return. The time for the feast came quicker than I expected. Once again, I stood in front of the mirror in my bedroom, assessing my clothing with a critical eye. I pushed a stray curl from my face. An assistant at the baths had fussed over my awkward attempts to cut my own hair. She had commandeered my scissors and proceeded to trim the ends, then had rolled my hair with hot metal tubes. Instead of being pulled into a bun, my hair now fell to my shoulders in big, soft curls. I looked ridiculous. But before I could rearrange it, someone knocked on my door. I grabbed my bow and peeked out the window. Cahill waited outside. His hair and beard appeared white in the moonlight. Opening the door, I said, "I thought we agreed to meet..." I gaped. Cahill wore a long silk tunic of midnight blue. The collar stood up, and silver piping followed the edge of the fabric to form a V, far enough below his throat to allow a glimpse of his muscular chest. The piping also went across his shoulders and dropped down the outside seam of his full sleeves. A silver mesh belt studded with gemstones cinched the tunic around his narrow waist. His trousers matched his shirt, and once again, silver piping traced the outside seam of his pants, carrying my eyes down to a pair of polished leather boots. Royalty incarnated.
"I pass your rooms on the way. Seemed silly not to stop," Cahill said.
He squinted into the lantern light that glowed behind me, and I realized he couldn't see my open-mouthed stare.
"Ready?"
he asked. "Give me a moment." Returning to the sitting area, I gestured Cahill toward a chair as I went into my bedroom, where I secured my switchblade, then smoothed my skirt. With no time to fix my hair, I settled for tucking it behind my ears. Curls. Living in Cytia had made me soft. Cahill smiled broadly when he saw me in the light. "Don't laugh," I warned.
"I never laugh at a beautiful woman. I'd much rather laugh and dance with her."
"False flattery won't work on me."
"I meant every word."
Cahill offered his arm.
"Shall we?"
After a slight hesitation, I linked my arm in his.
"Don't worry. I'm only your escort tonight. I would offer to protect you from the drunken attentions of the other men, but I know all too well that you're quite capable of holding your own. You're probably armed, right?"
"Always." We walked in companionable silence. Groups of students and other couples headed in the same direction soon joined us. Lively music pulsed through the air, becoming louder as we approached. The dining room had been converted into a ballroom. Orange, red, and yellow velvet streamers twisted along the ceiling and draped the walls. Laughter and conversation competed with the music as some people drank and ate, while others danced on the wooden dance floor. Everyone appeared to be wearing their finest clothes. The room sparkled with jewelry in the candlelight. Our arrival went unnoticed, but as Cahill pulled me through the crowd toward the back of the room, a couple of surprised glances marked our passing. A jolt snapped through me as we cleared the crowd and I spotted Leif. I hadn't seen him since Iris had left, and I had assumed since he had graduated from the keep he was no longer involved with the students or classes. But there he stood, next to Rose and Bane. Cahill aimed for them. I almost fainted when Leif smiled at me as we approached, but when he recognized me it turned into a scowl. I wondered what I would have to do to get a true smile from Leif. Dismissing the thought, I didn't want to earn his goodwill, and I certainly didn't need it. Now if I could keep saying that over and over in my mind, I might just start to believe it. When we joined the group, Bane complimented my hairstyle, while Rose ignored me. Our group only truly came alive when Zitora joined us.
"Perfect. Absolutely perfect," Zitora exclaimed over my outfit.
The talk soon turned to council business, and Cahill pressed Rose to get him on the agenda. Having no interest in discussing politics, my attention wandered as I scanned the crowd. I saw only a few of Cahill's men. They wore dress uniforms and stood awkwardly to the side as if on duty instead of being there for pleasure. Perhaps they were. I watched the dancers for a while. They circled the floor in pairs. After 8 beats, they stopped and then took 4 steps into the center, then 4 steps back and continued around the circle. The pattern was then repeated. Similar to some of my self-defense katas, the dance resembled a prescribed set of moves. Dax and Gelsey appeared. Bane students greeted the 3 master magicians with a stiff formality. Gelsey wore a soft green gown that shimmered in the lantern light. The gown's color matched her big eyes. Studded with gold buttons, Dax's red shirt had a mandarin collar. Gold piping lined the outside seam of his black pants.
"Hey, we match," Dax said to me. I could just hear him over the music. "Would you like to dance?"
I glanced at Cahill, debating with Leif. "Sure." Dax smiled and pulled me into an opening on the dance floor. Watching had been easier than doing, but with Dax's steady guidance, I soon caught the rhythm. As we circled the floor, Dax said,
Remember when I said you had 3 points against you?
I nodded.
Now there are 5.
What now? I asked in exasperation.
It was hard to believe I'd had time to make anyone else mad.
You came to the feast on Cahill's arm. Everyone will assume 2 things. 1, that you're his girlfriend. And 2, that you're an Ixion sympathizer, which is the greater of the 2 evils.
Well, they would be wrong. Who comes up with all these points and assumptions? I demanded.
Not me, that's for sure, Dax said. If I were in charge, we'd have more desserts at dinner, more feasts, and much more dancing.
We danced for a while in silence. I mulled over the implications and decided not to waste my time worrying about what everyone else thought, or to bother attempting to change their perceptions. My time at the keep was just a stopover. Let them wonder.
My nervousness about the evening dissipated with my decision. I smiled at Dax.
You have a mischievous glint. What are you planning?
Only 5 points against me? I narrowed my eyes in mock concern.
Such a small number. I say we try for 8 or 10.
A wolfish grin spread across Dax's face.
My lady, you are far too modest. You're more than capable of handling 15 or 20.
I laughed with genuine pleasure. Dax and I twirled around the dance floor for a few more songs before rejoining the group. Cahill met our return with a sour look. Before he could say anything or go back to debating with Leaf, I grabbed Cahill's hand and pulled him toward the dancers.
Tonight is not for business, I said as we followed Dax and Gelsey around the floor. Tonight is for fun. Dancing instead of fighting. He laughed.
You're right.
The evening flew by as I danced with Cahill, Dax, and Bane.
Even the stable master swung me around for a rowdy foot-stomping song.
If Cahill hadn't insisted, I wouldn't have stopped to eat. Iris's arrival should have made the evening perfect, but I could see exhaustion etched in her face.
Wearing a simple light blue gown instead of traveling clothes, she must have taken the time to bathe and to decorate her regal bun with rubies and diamonds before coming to the feast.
Is everything okay? Did you find Tula's sister? I asked. Iris nodded.
Her sister, Opal, is with Tula now.
She gave me an odd look. Should we try to help Tula tonight?
Iris shook her head.
Let Opal spend some time with her sister. It's the first she's seen her since Tula was kidnapped.
Again, Iris flashed me that strange look.
What then? There's something you're not telling me.
I warned Opal of Tula's condition, both mental and physical.
Iris rubbed a hand along her cheek.
But when we arrived, it seemed a miracle had occurred.
Iris peered with a deep intensity into my eyes. Is Tula awake? I asked in confusion. Iris's news contradicted her body language.
No, her soul is still in hiding. But her body is completely healed.
Chapter 16. How? I asked Iris. Hayes had said he could only heal a few bones at a time.
Perhaps another healer had come to help him with Tula.
You tell me,
Iris demanded.
What did you do that day? Hayes has been in a state ever since. He's terrified of you.
Me?
Bane came to my temporary rescue.
Perhaps you ladies would like to go outside.
I looked around. Several people had stopped talking and gawked at us.
I forget myself, Iris apologized to Bane. Now is not the time to discuss this.
She headed toward the buffet. Everyone returned to their conversations, but she wasn't finished with me.
Yelena, she said in my mind, please tell me what happened with Tula.
Sudden dread churned in my stomach. Was Iris upset because I had lost control of my magic and had accidentally healed Tula? Or because I could have jeopardized Tula's life? With reluctance, I told her everything that had happened that day in Tula's room.
You were in pain and you pushed the pain away from yourself? Iris asked.
Yes. Did I do something wrong?
No. You did something impossible. I thought you tried to heal her, which would have been dangerous. But it sounds as if you assumed her injuries, and then healed yourself.
I stared at Iris with pure amazement. She sat across the room, eating her dinner.
Could you do it again? She asked.
I don't know. It must have been an instinctive reaction.
There is only one way to find out.
I felt Iris's weary sigh.
For now, I want you to get a good night's rest. Meet me in Tula's room tomorrow afternoon.
Iris broke her magical connection to me. Confusion creased Cahill's face, and I realized he had been watching me.
What's the matter? He asked. Shouldn't Fourth Magician be pleased that you healed that girl?
That would mean...
Oh, my sword! He gaped.
Before I could press him for details, the music stopped.
Midnight, Bane declared. Time to go. The students have a full day tomorrow.
His delighted anticipation of a full day of learning caused a ripple of smiles around him. Obediently, everyone streamed out into the darkness, heading off to dorms and apartments. As he passed, Dax caught my eye. He grinned and held up 7 fingers. I looked forward to hearing from him about my additional 2 points of gossip-inspiring behavior. Cahill walked me to my rooms. He was unusually quiet. Finally, I couldn't stand it anymore. Oh, my sword, what? I demanded.
I realized something, he said, trying to shrug me off.
Not content with his vague answer, I prompted, which was,
if I told you, you would be angry. I don't want to end the evening with a fight.
And if I promised not to get upset?
You would anyway.
Tomorrow, then?
Ask me the next time we're fighting.
What if we don't fight? Cahill laughed.
With you, there is always a next time.
Then, with a speed that surprised me, he grabbed me around the waist and pulled me in for a quick kiss on the cheek before releasing me.
Till tomorrow, he said over his shoulder as he strode away.
It was only after watching him disappear into the darkness that I realized I stood with my switchblade clutched in my right hand. But I hadn't triggered the blade. The south was making me soft. First curls, now this. Shaking my head, I opened my door. At Tula's room the next afternoon, I had to squeeze my way in. Tula's bed occupied the center. Leaf and Haze stood on the right side of her bed, and Iris and a young girl stood on the left. Tula's guard, one of Cahill's men, looked uncomfortable wedged in a corner. Haze paled when I looked at him. Iris introduced me to Opal, Tula's sister. Opal's long brown hair was pulled into a ponytail, and her red-rimmed eyes looked swollen from crying. I hadn't expected an audience.
Iris, I said, I need to spend some time with Opal before I can try to bring Tula back.
Leaf muttered something about grandstanding on his way out, and Hayes just aimed for the door.
Do you need me? Iris asked.
No.
We don't have much time, Iris warned as she left the room.
She didn't need to remind me that Tula's attacker still roamed free, possibly hunting for another victim. However, I knew in my heart that if I rushed this, I wouldn't succeed. I asked Opal to tell me about her sister. In halting sentences, the young girl told me only a couple of stories of their childhood.
Tula once made me a large glass tiger to protect me from nightmares.
Opal smiled at the memory.
It worked, and the tiger looked so lifelike that Tula started making other glass animals.
She glanced from her sister's still form to the guard in the corner. Opal seemed hesitant and distracted by her sister's condition. So I changed the subject and asked about her trip to the Citadel. Her dark brown eyes widened.
Fourth Magician woke us all up in the dead of night.
At the word dead, the young girl glanced with dread at Tula.
I was barely awake. Before I knew it, I was on the magician's horse, riding flat out for the keep.
Opal clutched her arms to herself.
When Tula was found, the healers rushed her to the Citadel.
My parents had to find people to work the kilns and take care of us before they could follow her.
They're on the road somewhere.
Opal began to ramble.
We didn't pass them. They don't know I'm here. It's my first trip away from home, and we stopped only to eat. I slept in the saddle.
That would explain Iris's exhaustion.
Even today she had dark circles under her eyes.
That also explained why Opal seemed so distressed. I switched tactics and invited Opal to take a walk. She appeared reluctant to leave her sister until I assured her that Tula would be fine. I showed her the campus. The air temperature felt comfortable. With warm afternoons and chilly evenings, the weather during the cooling season was my favorite. Eventually, we wandered out into the citadel. I guided Opal toward the market. Fisk appeared with a ready smile and led us to a dress shop. I bought Opal a change of clothes, and Fisk played tour guide for her. When Opal seemed more relaxed, my questions about Tula grew more specific. As she remembered more stories, I pulled a thread of magic and linked my mind with Opal's, witnessing her memories as she spoke. I smelled the hot furnace of their family's glass factory and felt the coarse sand in my hands.
Tula and I used to hide from Mara, our older sister,